it became very obvious that there is still a lot of people that care very much, and many people called us, begged us, begged me personally, can you speak to my pastor? Can you please ask my pastor not to close?
Everyone, and welcome to Freedom Feature, and I'm your host, Barry Bussey. With me today, we have Pastor Henry Hildebrandt from the Elmer Church of God, and he's going to be talking us about religious freedom in Canada. Pastor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Gladly, Don. Thank you for having me.
You know, Pastor, you have been in the news over the last number of years, certainly during the COVID pandemic, as your church has been perhaps more of the vocal churches in Canada that have stood up with respect to the government's lockdown policies and so forth. So we want to get into that. But first, I would think our listeners would be very interested in your own personal background, because I understand that you were born outside of Canada. Perhaps you could give us a little bit about your background and what brought you to Canada.
Yes, I was born 1963 in Chihuahua, Mexico. I was 4 months old when John F. Kennedy was shot, to give you an idea.
Okay.
So I moved here with my wife, and our first son moved here in 1985 to Canada, looking for a better future.
And were you able to find a better future here in this country?
Well, I would say it depends on how you would look at it. Of course, I love Canada. Very, very, very beautiful country. And it definitely helped me on my feet financially. Of course, if we look at where we are right now, it is not exactly what I had in mind when I moved here. Back then, it seemed like Canada was the country that was inviting everyone worldwide. If you want freedom, come to Canada. So yes, in one way, it definitely gave me the dream that I was looking forward to. Definitely so. In some other ways, maybe not so.
So now you said it was in 1980, what was it again?
I was born in
Right,
1963,
but when you moved to Canada.
and we moved to Canada in 1985.
So in
That's right.
1985, we were in the midst of, let me see, going back 1985, things were very different back then. I'm thinking I know myself, I was in university at the time. And certainly we had a very stable country with respect to the idea of respect for tradition. Respect and also a pursuit of truth, I would think. Certainly that seemed to be the case. I know even at the university, I very much enjoyed being able to study history and political science and so forth at that particular time in my career. You know, as you reflected on coming to this country, what part of the country did you come?
We came to immigrated to Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay. And so you were pastoring there?
No, at that time, I was we had just recently married. Well, we were married for 3 years by back then in 1985, and I wasn't preaching yet. I would say that I felt the call that God was had in mind to use me for something. Didn't know for sure just what it was, but I was in search for truth myself. So I actually started preaching in 1991.
Oh, okay. And then the church in Elmer, can you tell us a little bit about the church there?
So we started, like I said, we started here in 1991. Was a number of families got together, and we decided that what we were actually looking for is we were looking for truth. We wanted to be a church that was actually living what they preach. We were not interested. I mean, my background is Mennonite background, as you probably guessed it. But the Mennonite religion is more a religion of tradition, not so much of conviction. And church that actually lived what they preach and lived by the truths of the Bible. And that's why we started here in 1991. There was a group that was gathering. there, and then I was one of the first ones that began to preach there as
Wow.
well.
So you spent so far, you've spent your entire pastoral career in the one church community then.
That is correct. Right here in the little town of Elmer, Ontario, that's where I started preaching, and that's where I'm still pastoring after what would it be, 9, so 32 years or something
Wow.
like that. Yes.
So with your church, you have do you have an understanding, or is there a theological teaching with respect to freedom, religious freedom, and so forth?
So to us, I would say, coming from Mexico, I was totally oblivious to how those things work, and came to Canada. I was not aware where Canada stood on that. I was, like I said, totally unknown area to me. We just came here. We felt like Canada, and we felt very, very welcome here at the immigration. Everywhere else, people were very nice, very, very nice. So I was not aware what exactly that would have meant. To be honest with you, that really hit us hard here when COVID set in. I was not really well familiar with where exactly Canada was before that, as far as religious freedom is concerned. All I knew was that Canada was a very welcoming country to people of all backgrounds and different religions or whatever. As far as I knew, they were accepting it all, whatever was coming this way.
Right. Okay, so then this concept of religious freedom then became an issue as a result then of the COVID pandemic.
That is correct. That's when it set in. We were not aware of it. And then, as you know, when COVID set in, one of the first things the government here in Canada did is close down the churches. And that was a very, very serious wake-up call for us. We knew the scriptures, we knew what the scriptures tell us, that the church must gather. But then we thought, well, what does the law say? So we instantly looked to the Bill of Rights, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and just to see what is actually the law, what's the Constitution of Canada, what does it stand on? So that's when our eyes were opened to it for the first time.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they say that necessity is the mother of invention, and certainly necessity when it comes to freedom causes one to be very interested in short order as and educated as to what freedom means and how we're able to maintain it. Now, what was your first experience as you moved as your church moved into the COVID restrictions, the COVID lockdowns? Did you close your church like the government had asked at the very beginning?
Yes, sir. We instantly closed down, and I instructed the congregants that we are in a serious pandemic apparently, and that hundreds and thousands, perhaps millions, will die as per the news that came from the government. So I said, let's get ready, let's shut down, and let's help wherever we possibly can. Apparently, it's going to be very, very serious. So yes, we did shut down
Okay.
immediately.
And the congregation was very compliant with respect to that.
100%. I explained to them what the news, and of course they had heard the news themselves as well. So we all we thought that what the government was saying, that it was serious and that they meant that, and that we were actually in a very, very serious pandemic. So we were basically preparing ourselves for the worst.
So then, at what point did you sense, or you feel, or you felt, I should say, that this was not as it seemed and that you wanted to open up the church? How did that process occur for you?
So actually, as you said earlier, we got educated very, very fast, crash course, we could say. So we found out very soon after the initial 2 weeks of flattening the curve, whatever they called it. It was shocking to us. They said, we didn't see the results of what they said what would be happening, or we didn't see the people just falling over left and right around us. It wasn't happening. And we were carefully listening to the news to see, is it happening anywhere? And then when they said, well, we need another 30 days, to us it became alarming basically right from the get-go. And where it really became alarming to us is when we noticed that even though there was a call from the government saying that how serious the situation was, we noticed that the parking lot at McDonald's or Tim Hortons or the liquor store or at the grocery store, we noticed that the parking lots were pretty well operating normally, but they were requiring us to have the church parking lot empty. And that seemed very, very right from the like very, very much from the beginning. That seemed very, very wrong. And that drove us to investigate even faster and find out what is actually happening. And that's how it came that we actually started to have what they call drive-in services.
Now, what I found interesting as I watched the story from afar, you would be holding your services in your parking lot. Everyone, from what I could see, were having their windows up, but they were listening to your preaching through their radio. Is that how it was?
That's exactly how it was. So we would put signs up by the driveway as they pulled up, telling them that you can listen into the FM station. And then I would stand on the platform of a trailer and preach to them. And everybody pulled up, and our security team would be all masked up and social distance and whatnot, and told the people, okay, park like this so that they could all see. And we said, keep your windows rolled up, don't step out of your cars. So we had, I mean, by that time, our parking lot was by far the safest parking lot in town. I mean, there was nothing happening because we were making sure that all windows were rolled up. That's how we had did our first services.
And so that duty of sense of duty you had was a sense of duty to the government to follow their regulations, and also, I assume, the duty to man, right? Because if in fact there was a situation where there wasn't social distancing, everyone was scared, of course, that they would spread the disease.
That's right. That's right. And I was very alert to the fact that it could be that a number of people from the congregation could suddenly die and whatnot. So I wanted to absolutely be responsible, as we would have been in the past years, whether it was whooping cough or some serious fever going around or whatever. We would have always, in the past years, always had asked families, if you have a contagious illness, don't come to church service because we don't want to spread it. So now this sounded like this was far, far worse than that. So yes, I was very aware and felt very responsible to the people and also to do what the government was requiring.
Right. Now, when did the government say to you, or did you get the permission of the government to do this, or you just felt, okay, this was a means of being compliant, being congruent with the government, but then the government started stepping in and saying, no, this is unacceptable?
So that's what happened is, and we would have never guessed at all. We thought this was the greatest invention. We had never heard of drive-in services in Canada, but we had heard of drive-in services in the States, and we thought that's the way we should do it, because that way we can still gather, we can still see each other, we can still wave to the people, and we can just have a good time together. And when we did that, the police pulled up on the parking lot. And they just asked what's happening. And we explained to them that we are having drive-in services with the windows rolled up. And they gave us thumbs up. They said, that's an excellent invention. That's their words. They said, it's an excellent invention. And which we did then for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then what happened is people drove by and they saw what we were doing. And the police told us that they had received, Sunday afternoon, they had received 15 calls of people complaining that we were gathering. And they said, didn't the government say there's no church gathering allowed? And I said, yes, but you know what we're doing, right? They said, yes, we understand and we know that it is safe what you're doing, but because people are complaining, we will have to tell you to stop. And that's where they touched a nerve, because I knew, okay, so it is not about the illness. It is about that the church is not allowed to gather. And that's where we felt that's where our mind totally changed, and we recognized there's something far deeper here than what meets the eye.
And what is fascinating about that is that it's the public at large, who, after listening to all of, the stories that were live on the news reports and the narrative that government was giving were obviously very scared. And there was a fear in the community that somehow by meeting together the way you were, that that was going to be a danger.
Correct. Correct. They thought by us gathering, whether that was in the cars or not, that we were definitely super spreaders at that point. Look what they're doing. But it like I said, it alarmed us that why is the safety issues that we are considering, why are they not taken into and why are people not considering those, since we are, like I said, the safest parking lot in town? So that's where it became clear to us. It's not about the virus. There's something else here.
Yeah. And do you think what was the something else that you were concerned with?
So that's, like I said, I feel like we got educated at a rapid speed, because we were quickly looking into what's the charter saying, what's the Bill of Rights saying, what's the criminal code saying, like, can we not have church services? Like, why is this? And it became very clear to us that there was an agenda that came from the higher up people, even beyond our premier or the local police. We felt clearly, which obviously now we look back and we know that is what it was. It's very obvious to all of us now. But these orders came from the higher up people who had a different agenda in mind, which was to control the people, to separate, to divide. Because when we noticed the tactics, they said, you need a social distance, you need to wear a mask, you're not allowed to sing. Those were very obvious signs of, like, you would come to the store and you could feel there's no communication. You can't smile at anybody. You cannot talk to anybody. It seemed very obvious that the larger thing here was to control the people, to calm them down, to hold them down. And they said, stay in your houses, stay in your houses. It just seemed very obvious that it was to divide community. Mm. And I should add that for us was the wrong thing to say and to do for them to approach us, because we are a very close-knit community as a church, not just as a church. We're actually as a community. We work together often. We spend evenings together, eating together. So that was just the wrong approach. And the more they pressured us, the more we felt that there's something seriously wrong. Mm.
So do you think it was any kind of discrimination from the public at large, like because you're a church? Did you feel anything like that? Was there a sense of a prejudice, perhaps, against religious people that this would have been? Or was it not that, but just simply the fear? And how would you know, I suppose, in some ways?
Sure. Sure. At that point, we did not know. And of course, we tried to get confirmation from all around us. I was looking around. So what's happening to anybody else? So yes, I did see the small businesses were being closed. So I could tell that it wasn't just the churches that were being hit. But I would say almost from the beginning, you could clearly feel that churches were definitely the aim, like they were aiming at the churches. And I think the reason why they did that was, it became clear to me when they made it very obvious on the radio and on television. They said all the non-essential places need to be closed. And I thought, church is non-essential? And then they confirmed that they said, yes, church is non-essential. You can do that over video. You can do that over Zoom. Just you can have church, but just not in person. So I would say it seemed very, very strange. And it definitely felt like the churches were singled out at that point, because then especially when they saw that they were succeeding with most of the churches that they obeyed, some very willingly, some maybe not so willingly, but most churches closed, Then it rapidly got a lot worse for us because then they said, look, they're all complying. What is your problem?
Yeah, so it obviously there was a real sense here that had more churches done what you folks did and just say, hey, this is something that's very important to be able to have church, chances are the government would be reticent to be applying pressure to you, even when you went out of your way to ensure that there was no contact with anybody.
Correct, correct. Yes, absolutely. I mean, looking back now, and I think I would say there's probably a number of churches that, looking back now, they realized that was not the way to do it. They realized that it was a trick, so to speak. So I think going forward, perhaps we might see somewhat of a different response. But I would say that had the churches taken a stand like they should have, there's no way that the government would have done that. What was shocking to us during that time was when you look, whether that was in Cuba or Russia or Poland or whatever, even in the time of persecution, time of war, it's actually a rare thing, very rare thing that they would have shut the churches down. And that's why people from those countries were very alarmed because they found that very strange that why would they shut the churches down, especially when we first complied and then made our parking lot the safest parking lot in town? So why come after us after that? So that's when it felt like it definitely there was something very wrong.
Yeah, and from my own particular study in the law and political science, history, and so forth over the years, it strikes me that Canada is definitely a very different country where governments, bureaucracies look at churches and see them, as we found out, as non-essential. And therefore, if the bureaucracy feels that church is not important, then everybody should feel it's not important. And I think your church certainly showed them and showed the country that no, actually, church is very important to people of faith. And it is something that I certainly, as I've, watched your experience unfold over the years, the last several years, one in which, I always say to people, you have to look at the outliers. And in many ways, your church was an outlier, one that didn't fit the mold and follow everything. But nevertheless, I think it's quite evident, as you've expressed here on the program today, that you were very careful to ensure that your people were not going to be endangered, that the public at large wasn't going to be in danger. Even the police agreed with you. But we got a sense of some form of prejudice, to what extent, but certainly within government and government bureaucracies, we saw that being played out. And I think what's important is that you and your church were able to show that, hey, no, church is in fact very important. Let me just ask you real quick, and I see
Very
our time
important.
is,
Let me ask you real
sorry,
quick.
go
I see
ahead.
our time. No problem. I was just going to say it also became very evident that when we stayed open, that it became very evident that church is essential. People were traveling from all over the place, 5 hours away, 6 hours away, and people calling in and letting us know, supporting us. So I'm saying I was positively surprised that to see across Canada that it's like people were waking up. Maybe at first it looked like, well, Canada doesn't care about religion, people don't care about Christianity, but it became very obvious that there is still a lot of people that care very much, and many people called us, begged us. Begged me personally, can you speak to my pastor? Can you please ask my pastor not to close? So maybe I would say the pastors are the ones that failed more than the people in general, than the layman. The congregants, the parishioners from all over the place, many of them were so bitterly disappointed that their church closed, and in that sense they saw through it much clearer than the pastors did. I think the pastors, what the problem was, which I've which again was a crash course that you had to go through during those days. I found out back then already that the government has handouts, pays money to the churches, and they were if you were not gonna close your church, they were that money was gonna stop. So they were very afraid that the government was gonna stop that money. And thank God that we were not receiving any money from the government, and therefore we were not servants to the government in that sense. But there's a website that you can go on, and you can tell exactly which churches took the money from them. And it's very unfortunate that the churches would bow down to the government, being afraid that the government might come after them, you know.
So I am curious about that website now that you mentioned it. What is the website?
So I am so sorry. I apologize that I don't have it in front of me, but I can definitely get that
to
you,
and
so that you can look that up for yourself.
And we'll put it on the bottom of our credits here of this video. I want to ask real quick, what was the experience of COVID in your community? Did you have a lot of spread of COVID in your church?
That's the interesting thing is that we did not. I would definitely give God the glory. We did not have a spread of COVID among us. We had not a single death in all of 2020, 2021, 2022. Never, not one person died during that time. So, like I said, I give God the glory for that. Obviously, it could have happened, but it didn't.
And how many people are in your congregation?
Around 200.
200 people. Okay. And but was there a number of people who got the disease, though, that were sick and ill with COVID?
So had we not heard about COVID, we would have not thought of anything. We would have thought different people had the flu. So if they, I understand, I look at the data and I see that during those years we had zero flu, the flu all of a sudden disappeared. It was all just COVID. Yeah. Then I would say if they want to call the flu COVID, then yes, some of our people had the COVID because they had the flu, right? Mm. But had we not heard about COVID, we would have not thought of anything.
Mm. Interesting. Interesting. Well, Pastor, I want to continue this conversation, but I need to end this segment now. But I want to continue the conversation about your experience with the government and the court cases that you were involved with, the people who came, the people who were charged, who were attending your church services. And so we will leave that to our next part of our interview. But I'm just wondering if there's something that you would like to share with our viewers now at the end of this segment of our discussion.
I would like to share this, that, you know, the scripture says what the devil meant for evil, God turned around for good. It's talking about Joseph, you know, where life turned around for him, right? Mm. I would say that looking back, I can clearly see how the Lord did the exact thing here. The devil meant it for evil. The devil meant to divide us, but it has done us in that sense very, very good. It has brought us closer together. It has brought us closer to God. It has kind of thrown us out there to do a lot more outreach. We have never done outreach like this. And what I mean by outreach is we have never gone out to find out where the people are that need help, whether that's in the big cities or whatever it is. So we are never the same since then and never will be the same. I am personally a changed man since then because I understand and look at things totally different. I understand, and I know it's a strong statement, but I feel that if my faith is not worth dying for, my faith is not worth living for. So we take faith totally different now than we used to. And the Word of God, we rely on the Word of God. We stand on the Word of God more than ever before.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Pastor, for being with us.
You're very welcome.
And I want to thank you, our viewers, for taking the time to be with us today. You know, you may not agree with the opinions that are expressed by my guests or by myself on this program, but here on Freedom Feature, we are wanting open, honest, and transparent dialogue. And until next time, I'm Barry Bussey. The fight for freedom consists not only in the legal battles in court, but also in the battle of ideas at the universities and in the media. It takes time, effort, and money to keep on top of the debates for freedom.
Your donation allows us to keep fighting for all Canadians. FirstFreedoms.ca.